Oh, that's right. We're right here today on WCRS, and I have with me in the building the one and only representative, Mike Pitts. Mike Pitts, how you doing today?
I'm well. My ears are a little stopped up, so I may be talking loud and I may need you to.
Okay. All right. So you've been busy the last couple of days. You met the new president over there at Lander University. Saw you with your pal, Jeff Duncan.
Yep, I was there. Jeff had a meeting scheduled with him and was kind enough to allow me to meet with him at the same time. And it was a very, very productive meeting and a good meeting. Some of the stuff that we are looking at in South Carolina as far as higher education is concerned, he had a good perspective on coming out of the North Carolina system with a board of regents and stuff like that.
So, well, you know, changes are coming, aren't they?
They've got to.
Yeah.
We can't continue to do things the same old way, can't continue to fund things the same old way. I mean, a dollar's still a dollar, and that's how you fund, but priorities have to be looked at. Started the day this morning with Ware Shoals District 51, opening day of 90 years.
90 years.
The 90th opening day of District 51.
Wow.
And one of the videos that Superintendent Sprouse played over there was technology in the system that a book can be outdated by the time it hits a student's hands now because of the access to information via the internet and technology, how fast and how rapid things change. So we have to look at things in a new way. You and I have discussed that a little bit in the past video classrooms and that kind of stuff.
That was one of your ideas on how to bring education forward, get the very best, and then do more with videos with the classrooms.
Exactly, and crossing back over to the new president at Lander, Rich looks at some of that, and Jeff Duncan also had a good perspective on it, and we looked at the very easy accessibility to be able, if you don't understand something on the internet, to back up and watch it again, back up and watch it again. And a teacher in the classroom just doesn't have time to do that. And a professor generally is not going to do that.
That's true. That's true. Well, videos, I mean, you know, you can learn to do just about anything on the internet now.
Yeah, I learned to I learned to change a belt on a riding lawnmower, watching it on the internet. And there was a lot of backup and restart.
That's true. I learned how to do the headlight in our car just by watching a video. I was like, you know, and, you know, I think there's a generation age, though, where you don't think to do that. You know, you think, well, I've got to get a manual. You know, manuals really are something that are outdated today.
Well, a good manual is outdated. I was trying to put a Barbie house together for a granddaughter at Christmas this year. And the manual just as well have been written in Chinese or Mandarin because I couldn't make heads nor tails of it. And my daughter said, Dad, don't you have an iPad? I said, yeah. Well, bring it to me. And a moment later, she's got me a video showing me how to put it together.
That's my point, you know, that manuals don't even stay. I mean, so, but there is a point where you think, it's like a telephone book. I need a telephone. No, you don't. Just put it in there. You don't need the telephone book anymore. No. But no. You still have a moment where you think, where's the telephone book?
Well, I don't have to memorize phone numbers anymore. But God help you if the phone crashes or you lose it. I did. I lost my phone deer hunting a couple of years ago. And my entire calendar for 6 months was on that phone, and I had not backed it up to a computer.
I guess you don't do that anymore.
No, because I had a lot of people asking, where were you yesterday at 4 o'clock?
Yeah.
Well, not where I was supposed to be, apparently.
Absolutely. Well, technology certainly is changing our lives, and Google, you know, just put a question in and ask Google, and most of the time you'll be able to find the answer.
Yeah, and there's a bad side also. because there's a lot of misinformation on the internet as well.
That's true.
When people say, well, it's got to be true, I read it on the net. Okay.
Yeah, okay. And therein lies the problem. But so you had a nice meeting with that. And then, what was it, last weekend Rand Paul was in town, and you've decided that you're going to completely support Rand Paul?
I have.
Why? It's early, and I'm surprised that you've made that decision so early.
I have never publicly endorsed a presidential candidate in a primary in the past. I generally don't make any kind of a primary endorsement.
Okay.
Because I'm going to need the same voters that are behind some of the other candidates in November.
Sure.
Rand Paul is, in a nutshell, adherent to the Constitution of the United States, the Bill of Rights, and the rule of law. And that's absolutely what we need at this point in our history. Rand Paul's not afraid to stand up and take on whoever is on the other side, no matter what the issue or who it is. And number three, he has a distinctive plan for each part of the platform that a president's going to need to look at. The one thing that some people question is his foreign policy and defense. Mm-hmm. But if you look past the bullet point and you look into his actual plan, he does not want to defund the military. He wants to prioritize how we fund the military. And I think that's a great idea.
Well, what is, I mean, because that is the point that a lot of people have made. And, of course, South Carolina is a very strong military state. And we were very fortunate to have, just 180 jobs cut out of Fort Jackson.
We could have lost Fort Jackson.
We could have. That's right.
The state did a very good job, not only our federal delegation, but the state legislature, in preempting that for the last 3 years by forming a joint committee, which I do serve on, in the General Assembly to look at the BRAC Commission, be prepared for the BRAC Commission, and to make it attractive for them to stay here and keep our bases open.
Absolutely, but that isn't really where Rand Paul stands, though, is it? I mean, that's what people are really concerned about him.
Well, if you look at the policy, I mean, if you look at actually what he's trying to do, yes, he does stand. The Fort Jackson, mm-hmm, is the oldest training site for basic trainees. He doesn't want to do away with that. Parris Island is the only basic training center for the Marines on the East Coast. He doesn't want to do away with that. What he wants to do is prioritize where and how the structure of our military establishments are. And I don't disagree with him on that. It's like in the debate the other night, we shouldn't be funding our enemies. I agree with that.
Correct. Yes.
We shouldn't walk out like we did in Vietnam and leave tons of equipment for the communists to take over. We shouldn't have done that in Iraq. But we did. Mm-hmm. I agree with that 100%. We need to take that money or take that equipment, keep it in our hands, and we also can divert some of the money that we waste in that arena to veterans who have served and who have come back, and we do need money in that arena. And Rand Paul supports that. Some people think he's weak on Israel, and he's not really weak on Israel. If you look at what he actually is proposing, he's not weak on Israel. Where I like Rand Paul is he's for states' rights.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Right.
He's for personal liberties. Absolutely. So am I. And Second Amendment, I could ask for no better candidate on Second Amendment. You know, a lot of people are drawn into the rhetoric of the millionaire, billionaire. What's his name? Trump. Yes, Trump. You know,
the multi-billionaire, we should say.
Donald Trump is saying what a lot of us think.
I think that's the appeal. Yes,
he is. He's saying what a lot of people want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
I've been accused of that occasionally, saying what comes to mind. My problem with Trump, and I talked to Trump South Carolina advisors, politicos yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and I said, when are you guys going to give him something more than just stating the obvious, which is what the problems are? I said, once he gets backed into a corner, what's his plan? I said, the guy's got an obvious track record of making money and losing money,
mm-hmm.
but what's his plan? Is he going to get
it? Well, what did they say? Did they say, well, that's coming, or what did they say?
They said his white pages are coming.
Yeah.
And I said, well, good luck with getting him to say them the way you want him to. And that's another thing with Rand Paul. When I sat down with Rand Paul, he had a five-year plan on the military. He had a five-year plan on the economy. He had a five-year plan on taxes and to get the IRS out of my life. Hallelujah. Praise the Lord. Amen. Get the IRS out of my life.
Is he closing them down?
Yes.
Yes.
It would. In 5 years, it would. Because we would all be able to fill out a one-sheet page that gave no exemptions to anyone. And I like that.
Sure.
I pay the same percentage as Donald Trump. And no more, no less. Just happens his percentage would be $1 billion. My percentage wouldn't be near that. But, yes, he has a distinctive plan to do all those things. You know, I got hit by the Democrats yesterday. Not my friends in the House of Representatives, but the chairman of the state Democratic Party,
mm-hmm.
over that endorsement of Rand Paul.
Yeah, he said he didn't say too kindly things about you. He said, Senator Rand Paul talks about being a new type of Republican, but he is embraced by a politician, and they're referring to you, Mike Pitts, who has repeatedly supported a divisive symbol from the past.
Well, he's wrong on she. She is
he,
wrong.
It's Jamie.
That was written by Jamie.
It says contact Diane May. It actually doesn't say that it came from Jamie. It says Diane May to contact.
But either way, whichever one wrote it, they're wrong on both points. One is Rand Paul is a new kind of Republican.
Mm-hmm.
He's one that not selling his soul to Washington. I don't believe Rand Paul cares if he goes back to Washington or not. And what I mean by that is he's not married to it. It's like I told some folks during the flag debate, if you want to send me home, what does that mean? It means I get to hunt, I get to fish, I get to spend time with my family. Mm-hmm. Let's see, is that a threat? I'm not married to Columbia, Ann. People ask me often, are you going to run for higher position? When are you going to run for something different? I'm where I want to be if I'm going to be there.
Has to be increasingly difficult in today's world to stay in it.
The only thing I can think of that is harder,
mm-hmm.
in today's world would be the profession that I retired from.
Yeah, and you know, I had a conversation with Gerald Brooks and the police chief here. They are having a big problem getting police officers, military, et cetera, to come on board.
Well, the state is having the same problem. There's some things that are on the horizon in law enforcement on the state level. I'm not at liberty to talk about right at the moment, but it's going to be the worst year for state law enforcement. Manpower-wise, that we've ever experienced. And I warned of this from the State House floor as the chairman of the committee that writes the budget for law enforcement, that we were headed here. And when you have the attack of the media, mm-hmm. the lack of support of the public, combined with low pay, very low pay.
Yes.
You're not going to get guys that did the job like I did and Gerald Brooks, guys that worked when we started out. And that was people that was attracted to the profession for the love of the profession. And we worked two extra jobs
to so be that, able to do the, that
to
job.
Be able to do the job we wanted to do. I did. There were days that I worked three jobs in one day, my police job and two other side jobs just to put clothes on the kids and food on the table, because the salary for a law enforcement officer was low and my wife was a stay-at-home mom. We both chose that. But with no pay and the pressures that law enforcement face today with video cameras and phone cameras on them 24/7, you're not going to attract people, the kind of people you want, to that profession, because they're not going to put up with that pressure. They're not going to expose their family to that pressure. And they're certainly not going to expose their family and themselves to criminal prosecution for doing their damn job.
Well, you know, in a lot of aspects, that's like becoming going to serve in the House or the Senate or even in South Carolina. I mean, there is a lot of downsides toward putting your name in the hat anymore.
Well,
and the dollars are tremendous to be able to get into it, but just your image and your family's image and everything else is up for grabs.
Well, someone can say anything they want to about me without repercussion. And it does not have to be fact-based, nor does it have to be true.
Right.
But then I have to defend it.
Yes.
And that's difficult, especially with the way people can do it through anonymity now on the internet and stuff. The flag debate,
yes.
And I'll get back to this
right.
thing from the Democrats in a moment. But during the flag debate, there were real threats made on the lives of legislators on both sides of that issue.
Those that were for removing it and those that were for not removing
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Wow. And I was the floor leader on one side of that issue.
Yes.
And when they make threats to me, I was a cop. I take it in stride. You know, I take them seriously, but I also take them in stride. But when they make threats to my family, when they call my home knowing that I'm in Columbia on the floor
right.
and say things that scare my granddaughter to tears, that ticks me off severely. SLED investigates those and are not afraid to put people in prison for making those threats, because you better, in today's society, take threats against a public official very seriously. We've seen it. We've seen it carried out. But some of those things that were written to me, mm-hmm. I'm going to expose at some point. But here's the thing I'm proud of, Ann.
Okay.
Very few of them came from within South Carolina. Most of them came from the West Coast or the Northeast. Very, very few came from South Carolina. And those that did, most of them came from Charleston. South Carolina, during that flag debate, was a shining star.
I thought that South Carolina was a shining star from the beginning when the murder has happened down there in Charleston, through the whole, even through the debate, the flag debate. It was amazing to me that we did not have any riots. We did not have any, you know, there was a little bit after the flag came down, they had a rally, but even that was relatively calm.
Well, the issue was the national press wanted a Ferguson or a Baltimore, and they didn't get one. They didn't get one out of the Charleston community. They didn't get one out of the state legislature,
right.
And they did not get one of the people from South Carolina post-result. And that's what they were clamoring for. And I've been told, and I'm proud of this, I've been told, I've got it in writing from people on both sides of the aisle and both sides of the issue.
Okay.
That I set the tone for the debate. I was number one up. And I set a tone for the debate that was not confrontational. And we ended up with a good debate that followed. And people got their say, and it got emotional a couple of times. But it never hit the point where it became demeaning. And that's what the national press was there for. And they also wanted to put a face to one side of the debate and say, this is the redneck yokels from South Carolina, the people that seceded from the Union, et cetera. And I didn't give them that opportunity either. I've been told I didn't see it, but I've been told that I handled the national press well, and I was proud of that.
You know, a lot of people wondered, though, in the end, Mike, why you didn't vote in that final vote.
Two reasons. One is I was exhausted. I had not slept the night before that debate because I met with the speaker the afternoon before, and I knew what the strategy was. I had put the strategy together with the other people that were on the side with me. And as the floor leader on that, there was a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. It was compounded greatly by the fact that it was being viewed not just nationally but internationally. And at 3:30 in the morning, I was awake and going over what was to come
that day.
At 6:30 a.m., I was walking the State House grounds, looking at the different monuments and memorials on the State House grounds, and that's where some of those amendments came from. They were written that morning based on that walk. By the time I went through that debate, I had gone through an entire day of trying to guide the chess pieces, and we got to the final vote after midnight. Mm-hmm. Number one, I was exhausted. Number two, that third vote didn't matter. We were 22 votes down on the second vote.
Right.
The third vote did not matter. There's no way we're going to pick up 22 votes in 15 minutes. And I knew that. I went straight to my room, collapsed in the bed, and went to sleep. And
how did you feel about it, though, Mike? How did you feel about the whole day and the whole experience when you went to your bed and collapsed that night? How did you feel?
I felt mixed emotions. One is, they said here that I was an ardent supporter of keeping the flag up. Mm-hmm. They obviously didn't listen to the debate. The first 20 minutes of the debate, I said, if it brought pain to the heart of Lonnie Hosey, a highly decorated, twice wounded Vietnam veteran that is a good friend of mine and sits on my subcommittee, if it brought pain to his heart, I was willing to vote to bring that flag down. What I was asking for was the other side to come to a compromise to give us, those of us that do see it as heritage, an equal monument to what the is portrayed for the Northern soldiers on the African American memorial. It's a beautiful depiction of the first South Carolina Volunteers of the 54th Massachusetts. Our Southern folks should be memorialized in the same way, in my opinion. And that was what I was trying to do. The other side had no desire to compromise. And I realized why later. We were sold out by leadership. We being those of us on my side of the aisle. My side of the issue. The other part of that equation, Ann, is I was told by leadership one thing. The Democrats were told another thing. Neither of us knew that until late in the night. Had I known what I now know, I would have made my points but prior to lunch and either won or lost prior to lunch.
And could have saved the whole day for yourself.
That's not what I was asked to do. I was asked by leadership to take the debate to 2 o'clock on the first round and then go into caucuses and let the Speaker of the House look and see where we could go from there. And there were promises made that weren't honored.
Wow. These are the things you don't find out till after the facts, though, do you?
Well, you find them out where, from my position, you find them out as the battle's going on. The public doesn't see that, and the public doesn't know it. But at no point in time did I advocate for the flag absolutely staying where it was. At no point during the entire debate did I do that.
Did we ever see any of that?
You didn't see it in the press.
That's what I'm asking, yes.
But it was televised live.
Sure.
And people heard that. That, as I said, I've gotten letters from people that told me I'd done an admirable job of representing an issue, trying to bring compromise, which I did. Mm-hmm. And it's people from the other side of the aisle. One lady right here in Greenwood, that her letter, and I won't get rid of this letter. It says, I've been an avowed Democrat all my life, but I will in the future consider voting for you because of the way you handled that debate. And that letter meant a lot to me.
Absolutely.
I won't get into some of the negatives that came out of Charleston because they were, I don't think they had very good vocabulary because a lot of words were repeated.
I understand.
But Rand Paul is a new kind of Republican. He's one that looks outside the box. He's not like the Speaker Boehner and that crowd who, once they get in power, their soul is sold to it. He is that kind, and I like that. And the other part is the South Carolina Democratic Party, the state party, might want to take a close look at what they stated, because Todd Rutherford, the minority leader, and I end up on the same side more often than not because we're both libertarians at heart. He's a Democrat that leans libertarian. I'm a Republican that leans libertarian. And what that means is he could very easily be a Rand Paul fan because of personal liberties, states' rights, Second Amendment rights, the Bill of Rights, and all those things that I support Paul for.
Very interesting. Hey, I am here with Mike Pitts. We're going to continue this great conversation. Hope you're going to stay right with us. But right now, let's just take a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here with Representative Mike Pitts. You know, Mike, I do admire the fact you were taking a beating out there, but you kept moving and moving the mountain to do what you were there to do. And, you know, I think that it is a shame in the political world that we live in today that the spin can change so rapidly and so radically with just a word or with something that people end up changing it.
Well, they do. And the national press is very adept at that. What bothers me is when local folks follow along with whatever and simply regurgitate whatever the national folks are putting out. But there are people in the media, both in the printed press and television and radio here in our state, that did do justice to it. Myra Ruiz with Channel 4 News did a very fair interview on the entire issue. The AP did a good job. Both of the reporters on the AP did a good job. I would give the Russian newspapers an interview before I would give the Post and Courier an interview again, because they never quoted accurately once during interviews. And that bothered me because they had in the past, which probably tells you why I got so much hate mail out of Charleston that didn't come from the rest of the state.
Probably. So what's going to happen the first of the year? You know, this is supposed to be it for the flag issue. It's done. The Confederate flag is down. What is going to happen after the first of the year?
That's a good question. After the first of the year, I think the first thing you're going to see is a flood of primary opponents on both sides of the aisle, on both sides of the issue. Because this was an emotional issue mm-hmm. for a lot of people in the state both ways. And I think primary opposition will be generated out of it. I know it already has been. There are people on the Republican side of the aisle that have already picked up primary opponents that stated in their announcements that this was why they were running. And I understand that our good governor may be targeting me in my district because...
Well, you haven't... You've said a few things, Mike.
Yes, I have, but I haven't said anything I regret, and I haven't said anything that was not true.
I think the word opportunist, did that word come up, I think?
I don't know that I used the word opportunist, but I probably said everything but that.
Okay.
In the final series, or final edition of my three-segment series I did on the flag debate, I pointed out very clearly that in Haley's epiphany, I saw aspirations for something I'd said on this radio before, and that's Potomac fever. She went from the day of the shooting saying the flag was not an issue involved in the Charleston shooting and it had no bearing to 2 days later, an epiphany and a tear-soaked message said, take the flag down immediately. Then she shot to number one in the vice presidential list of candidates. At the same time, my question now is, what if that endorsed candidate does not win the first in the South primary? Because there are a lot of people. If you read Governor Haley's Facebook page right now, it's not a pleasant place for her to be. I can tell you, I've been there. The amount of negative that's flowing her way, it can't be pleasant.
So what do you think? Do you think we're going to are we going to be able to get to business, or are we going to have a bunch of amendments and bills coming in that will keep this constantly stirred up after the first of the year?
You're going to see a lot of bills, but I don't think you'll hear a lot of bills. What I mean by that is there are people on both sides that will be filing bills consistently and are already working on them. But I don't think the Speaker nor the Chairman of the Judiciary has any appetite to take them up. I'm a little disappointed in that in one way because I had a commitment from some of the minority party to work toward that memorial, bronze memorial on the State House grounds that depicted the first South Carolina Confederate volunteers, who are considered, by the way, veterans, U.S. veterans, by act of Congress from 1958.
And so that memorial will not be being put in?
Well, I won't say that.
Okay.
There's more than one way to skin a cat.
Okay. All right. Well, that is, of course, that's been the big conversation. And do you think that it was right to have the debate when it happened?
No. And that was my biggest problem, Ann. My biggest problem was two things. And this is what I begged the Speaker of the House for. I alternately begged and yelled at him.
Right.
It does not need to be now because of the emotion. That was my biggest problem with what Haley did.
Right.
If you really wanted to have that debate, it should have been in January when we went back. We needed time distance between the emotion of the moment,
right,
and the actual debate. We handled it very well. We as a state, again.
Right.
Everybody involved handled it very well. But there should have been a time distance. And there was absolute circumvention of process. It never went through committee process. It never went through subcommittee process, either in the Senate or the House. It went directly to the floor by parliamentary moves in the Senate and the House. The people never had an opportunity to speak, and they should have. And that circumvention is a bad precedent.
Absolutely.
Subcommittee is the only opportunity that you, John Q. Public, has to state your piece. The rest of the way, it's up to me to state your piece. But the only opportunity you as an individual have to come say yes, no, maybe, is at subcommittee level. And that was thrown out the window. And it was thrown out the window for expedience. And if you want, bottom line is,
yes,
the guy, Matt Moore, that on my side of the aisle that criticized me, did not want presidential candidates having to answer any questions about the flag debate during presidential debates for the first in the South primary.
Oh, okay. I see. So we just did away by getting that done.
Oh, this is now over with. And I think that could have had a lot to do with our governor's epiphany in 2 days that we need to get this flag off the pole so it's not here when the first in the South primary occurs and the debates occur. I'm not doing anything but adding fuel to the fire for her to find me an opponent, am I? But it's the truth. And we don't want to come to the South Carolina and have to talk about a flag.
Right.
And the answer, if I'm a presidential candidate and you hit me with that question as a reporter, and
right,
I'm going to say, that is a South Carolina issue.
It's a state issue.
It's a state issue.
Yep.
There's a thing called the 10th Amendment. Next question.
Exactly. I mean, that is the answer. I mean, I've had conversations with Jeff Duncan where he said, "And that's a state issue. That's not one I'm involved in."
Well, I may,
you know,
and I may qualify that personally. Well, if I'm the presidential candidate and you ask me that question, you know me well enough to know I'm going to answer.
Right.
I may tell you what I just said and then say, "But personally,
I feel this.
I feel this way."
Sure.
I'm not afraid to do that. I will also tell you that certain things like county roads or county issues, they're not my issues. I do have an opinion on things, and I may tell you this is my personal opinion. Same thing with the federal stuff. You'll have to ask Jeff about that, or Lindsey Graham or Tim Scott.
Right.
That's not my territory. But here's what I feel about it. And if I were a presidential candidate, I would have done that myself. But thank God I'm not a presidential candidate.
Well, you know, there is certainly a lot of activity in our state right now from presidential political candidates here. Yeah. Going on. Rand Paul, Rick Perry's going to be here, I think Thursday. And I just saw a thing about Governor Perry is that he's not able to pay his staff here in South Carolina. So I don't know whether it means that he's almost done already or what is going to be happening there. Fiorini was here in Greenville. Huckabee.
I mean, like Fiorini. I like her a lot, too. I think she should be on the next debate front and center.
Well, the way she is in the polls right now, she will be on the next debate floor. Yeah,
I agree with that.
And I, you know what, though, there was something to be said of being in that 5 o'clock debate because it allowed somebody like a Carly to shine.
It did, And it also allowed a couple of people to be able to say, here's why I'm on the JV and shouldn't be here. You know, that's why coaches have a JV team. They can look back and say, this guy really needs to be up here on the varsity, and this guy needs to be down there.
Exactly, and, exactly.
I like one thing that I heard. I don't even remember which candidate said it.
Okay.
But he said, when we have to divide our camp because we have so many quality candidates and the other side can't even find one.
Was that Ben Carson? I can't remember.
I believe it was.
Well, I think it was Ben Carson.
He had several moments.
Yeah. You liked his one, his closing. I loved his closing comment about, you know, he separated Siamese twins. He's operated in vitro.
He's taken out half a brain.
Yeah. He had some good ones. He had some good ones. And I think he had a good debate. I liked his comment about when he's, you know, he hasn't talked about race because when he's operating on somebody, he's operating on the inside, not on the outside of their color or their skin or their hair or anything. He's operating on what makes that person a human.
Ben Carson is a solid, solid candidate. What I like about him, other than the fact that he is a very
he's outside the mainstream.
Well, he's outside the mainstream, but he's also very articulate, and he has policy. Unlike some other candidates in this race, he has an idea of where he wants to go and how he wants to get there. Every answer he gives is a well-thought-out answer.
Yeah, I think some people say that is part of his problem, is that he's too thoughtful. Maybe he doesn't come across with enough fire, shall we say. But
well, I think he might. I can envision a ticket where he could be a very good vice presidential candidate.
I agree with you there.
100%. I could see a ticket with he and Rand Paul. I could see a ticket with Carly Fiorina and Carson. I don't know. I would not be afraid to vote for Carson for president, but I don't know that he is quite ready for that part yet because of the fire.
Yeah. It is an interesting time, and you do have to say this, whether you like Trump or not, he certainly has created a interest in the party, which I think could have been a lot more ho-hum if it hadn't been for him stirring the pot, shall we say.
Well, I agree with that, Ann. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm also wary of the fact of how close he is to Hillary Clinton. And disruption in the camp. Let me put it this way. With all of the air sucked out of publicity at this point by Donald Trump, we're not talking about Benghazi. We're not talking about violating federal law with deleting emails. We're not talking about a server being unprotected in my own home. The list goes on and on about things we're not talking about the Democratic front runner.
Well, that is true, but we do have Congressman Trey Gowdy, which will have his day coming up in October with Hillary Clinton.
I can't wait to see it.
I think it's October 22nd, if I remember correctly. Yeah, so that is coming up. And, you know, the fact that the FBI is involved there is, I think, causing her a little bit of concern. I don't honestly see how she can just be smiling and going on like it's just not there.
Well, some people know no level of arrogance.
There you go. That's a good one. But, you know, we've talked a lot about politics here and everything today. But I did want to ask you, because I know the roads is an issue that didn't get resolved in this session of South Carolina politics here down there in Columbia. And how are we going to get this under control?
The House passed the bill. The Senate would take it up. The governor's opposed to it, so I don't know. I told you sitting here months ago that the issue would not be resolved this year. I told WLBG Radio in Lawrence, same thing. The roads won't get resolved this year, and the reason was not going to be the House. Now, did we address the roads? Yes, we did. We addressed the roads very well this year, to the tune of $400 million, almost right at $400 million. But did we address the issue? No, we did not.
Right. And next year, will it get finalized? Do you think it was a good idea to send money back to the counties and just have them decide where they want to spend the money?
I think it was, because there are certain restrictions on how that money can be spent. That money has to be spent on state roads. And I think the county has a good grip on prioritization of which state roads need to be fixed.
Okay.
It couldn't be spent on money on roads that were federal funded highways. And yes, I agreed with that. As a matter of fact, I was one of the ones that pushed for it to go back to the counties, because the county CTCs in my area of the world, now not in all areas of the state, but in my part of the world, the CTCs do a pretty doggone good job of stretching the dollar. And they do a better job, in my opinion, than Columbia's highway department, because they don't have the same duplicity of engineering and everything else that Columbia wants.
Well, speaking of Columbia and everything, what are we going to do about the Department of Transportation? I do understand Christy Hall is back in charge again. That was kind of something that kind of slid right in there when they didn't have anybody. Christy's back in that seat. What's going to happen with the Department of Transportation?
That's another good question. Haley wants absolute control of the CTC. Of the Department of Transportation. But and you have to look at her track record of cabinet appointments with.
It hasn't been good. We can just go ahead and say it has not been good.
No, DHEC, DSS, and. If it's a cabinet agency and I call on your behalf, if I call on Greenwood's behalf, the answer I'm going to get is we work for the governor. And that's not good either.
Right.
Especially when the governor does not have a 1-800 number that someone answers.
Correct.
So that you can talk directly to that individual about the cabinet agency.
In answer to your
question, I can't answer that. The only thing the Senate did this year, other than pass a budget, along with the House, was the flag, at an expedited rate. They didn't touch the roads bill. They didn't touch. Well, they didn't touch any of the controversial issues this year.
And next year is an election year.
That can be good or bad.
Can be good or bad. It can be good because?
Because the voters can let them know.
Yeah.
They've got the candidates have to be out there, just like I do every 2 years. The body of the people has to stay in touch with the people. The Senate feels a little insulated from that.
Now, how are you feeling about, you going to run next time?
I am. I announced a couple of weeks ago that I was going to run again. I have a tendency when told we'll come after you or we'll threaten you or to say, all right, bring it on.
You know, that's why we like you, Mike Pitts, because you're tenacious.
Well... look, I have tried to do a good job for this district, for both Lawrence, Greenwood, and formerly Abbeville County in the General Assembly. I'm in a position to help both counties very well. And
is that why you stay?
It is. If I weren't in the position I'm in with the ability to really help Lawrence and Greenwood counties, and Billy Odell is in that same position on the Senate side. If it weren't for being in that position, my response to my granddaughter's question would have been different.
You are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. You know, Mike Pitts, I think that you are in a good position. You fight the good fight, and you stand up when a lot of representatives in Congress and senators, politicians don't stand up. And for that, I commend you, Mike.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't know any other way to do it. I was once told when I was running for majority leader and had the votes to win that position by the then Speaker of the House that he preferred someone else. And I said, just tell me why. Why do you want this other guy? He said, you are too brutally blunt and too blatantly honest to deal with the press for all of us.
That's a good one, Mike.
I took that as a compliment.
Right, exactly.
And I said, he said, can you take a position that you don't honestly believe in and fight for it on the floor? And I said, I don't think so. He said, if the press asks you a question, can you hedge on the answer? I said, it's not my nature. But I can deal with the press. I did it as a police officer.
Yes.
In a hot spot called Greenville.
Yeah.
And I think I proved last week that I could have dealt with the press, or 2 weeks ago, whenever.
Right. Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you coming and sitting down. I know you've taken a little time and enjoyed yourself, and I guess things are going to start getting busy for you again, though, huh?
Well, they did yesterday, and today's been the same. Meeting with the Chief Justice today, meeting with the school, with District 51, meeting with campaign staff, meeting with voter registration in Lawrence, and that's the way it'll go from now on.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for coming out today, Mike Pitts.
As always, I appreciate the opportunity. I always enjoy coming here.
Well, we appreciate you having you here. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.